Welcome to Locked On Nuggets, your daily Denver Nuggets podcast. I'm Matt Moore, your host from the Action Network. Joining me, my co-host, the man himself from DNVR, it's Adam Mares. Adam, how you hanging in, bud?
Doing good. Our king, Nikola Jokic, wears his new wedding ring on his shoelaces. The most wholesome of superstars, Matt. The most wholesome of superstars.
We're recording this on Sunday night after a football game was played that will not be discussed in any fashion. I will not force any sort of conversation about that. We have so much to talk about with the Nuggets, though, Adam. We have so much to talk
really
about.
We really do.
I wanted to wait, actually. I held off on the weekend pod because I realized I wanted to get your thoughts on Michael Porter Jr., and I want to get your thoughts on what Michael Malone said today. Let's go and do a rewind back to Saturday and start there.
Okay.
So, Will Barton comes out last week and says, I'm a starter in this league.
Right.
Which you had kind of, you asked the question. I first have to ask you, because I haven't spoken to you. Did you ask that question with the mindset of like, maybe Will will say like whatever's best for the team and like, I'm good if like I come off the bench and, you know, I'm just going to get my minutes. Like, I just want us to win. Was that like your hope in asking that? Was that the answer that you were kind of maybe looking for?
So I heard you insinuate that on the pod you did with Kendra, that that might have been my rationale. But here's what it really was. So asking, there's an art to asking questions. And I always hate when I feel like I'm leading the witness, right? Yeah. And I felt like the first half of my question, I was leading the witness. So I had to overcorrect to not lead and lead far away and leave that door open. So it did. I did fumble. I'm not going to lie. I fumbled it a little bit. But no, look, I think if you were to ask me who starts on this team or who should start fully healthy, I think Will Barton should at the shooting guard. So for me, this was a question because I wanted to set the table. And I think his answer helps set the table for what is, in my opinion, one of the issues or potential issues on the horizon for the Denver Nuggets. Gary Harris, I'm sure he didn't speak to the media. He was scheduled to speak to the media today, but he did not speak to the media. I'm sure if you asked him if he should start, he'd say yes. He started for this team for 5 years. Michael Porter Jr. said he wants to start. Will Barton said he wants to start. So somebody's left out. Unless they're going small, Michael Porter's your power forward, somebody is going to not be happy with it. And I just think that that's why I asked that question, because to me it was the most interesting question with Will Barton. Somebody's going to have to go to the bench. Is there anybody out here putting their hand up saying me?
I'm not saying that you hope for it. I think that I would think that from your perspective, it's like, no, I think Will should start. But it was between Will and MPJ.
Sure.
MPJ is going to start.
No question.
I will say this. I'm starting to think that they're actually going to do it, that they're actually going to run Jamal, Gary, Will, MPJ.
I'll believe that when I see it, man. I'll believe it when I see it.
We'll get to Malone's comments, but that's...
Oh, wow. What a tease. Gosh, this is good.
Here's the other thing, though. I feel like we're actually kind of being indicated this, because Malone, if he wasn't planning on doing that, if that was out of the question, Malone would have spoken to him and like, you're going to get asked about starting. This is the deal. And then like the great Nuggets PR department would have gone to them and been like, hey, you're going to get asked about this. This is what you should say. You should absolutely like, and you can choose to be like, screw you, I'm a starter.
Right.
And that's definitely possible. But there, I feel it's not, this doesn't always happen. Like, it's entirely possible this conversation does not occur, because there's lots of organizations I know where it doesn't, where they're just like, the guys are going to do what they're going to do. Mm-hmm. I think it's at least possible that this is the plan, which is why everyone was able to make it clear. I feel I'm a starter. I'm a starter in this league. Cause like Gary Harris is supposed to talk tomorrow, and I absolutely 100% believe we're going to ask him, and he's going to be like, I'm a starter in this league. Yeah. Which would be funny if we got Paul Millsap, and Paul Millsap's like, I don't know, man, I'm 35. Like,
well, he kind of did. I felt. I mean, like him and Jermichael Green, I think both. So to your point, maybe that is the plan. It's just, Matt, the Nuggets have handed Michael Malone a very offensive focused roster.
Yes.
And Gary Harris can defend. He's a great defender. I think Will Barton can, you know, I don't know about small forwards, but he's not a bad defender. He's a good, like, he knows what he's doing. I can't imagine them rolling out Michael Porter as your backside rim protector and giving him that much responsibility. It goes against so much of what Michael Malone has tried to lay the foundation for this season. So it's possible.
We'll talk about what Malone said today after when we have the break. Is it, in your mind, it's probably good that MPJ is like setting the tone of this is what I expect. Right. Like,
well, first of all, I thought he had a great presser. I thought it was a real, and look, these saying the right things doesn't mean a whole lot. Maybe we set the bar a little bit lower for Michael Porter because he hasn't always said the right things. But I felt like going into this that the other day when he spoke to the media for the first time, he had all the right things to say. He didn't, he talked about being benched last year and he's like, yeah, we were down 3-1. Of course I was benched. Like, it, basically saying it was my fault. So, yeah. You know, taking some of the blame, asked about having to get better. You know, he exuded the confidence he has always had. I mean, Michael Porter does not lack for confidence or self-belief, but he exuded that while also saying, like, I have to step up. Not, you know, saying I will step up and all these other things, but also, like, admitting that, hey, man, so much rests on my shoulders this year. Not we hope you can come along, but if you don't, you're going to tank this whole thing. I felt like that's what he was saying. So, to me, it was a good presser in that way. He said a lot of the things I wanted to hear.
Friend of the show, Katie Wingy, asked him, what did you do to work on your defense? And he said, I worked on film and I worked on quickness drills and all these things. Do you believe that any part of that is true?
Yes.
Do you think that any part of that is
true? I do. I don't have reason to believe he didn't. And he even, look, he could be a great liar, but he even talked about his training, his personal trainer, bringing out people to run through scenarios. And to be honest with you, I talk about how hard it is to work on your individual defense in the off season, maybe strength and quickness like he's talking about. But with Michael Porter, I do think there's a little difference. There is like learning the right technique on a hedge and on a show, yeah. and on those types of things. So if, and I, again, he said he did, but if his trainer got some guys out there to run on some scenarios about, hey, what happens when they try to split? What do you do when this happens or that happens? Actually would be useful for him because he needs those reps. So I'm going to believe him because I have no reason not to.
My hyper cynical take is that he will try on defense this season because once you're locked in as a starter and he's averaging 29 points
that's
per
true.
Game,
yep.
and he gets paid, then he never has to play defense yep. again.
It's true.
Never has to play defense again.
That is cynical though. I think here's one thing I'll say about Michael Porter. I mean, look, there's a lot of question marks with him. I don't want to like my belief in his talent does not mean that I believe he is going to realize that. It's one of the great questions for it. But I think he wants to be great. And that's another thing that he said in this thing was how he wants to guard the best. He wants to be guarded by the best. I take him at face value. Him and Jamal Murray, I think Nikola Jokic quietly, but especially him and Jamal Murray, I think they really do want to be not just good, not just paid, not just popular. I think they really do want to be the best basketball player they can be because they both believe they can be the greatest player ever. And I think that's a good drive to have. Not every player has that drive.
It's true. I think that's true. I think he definitely is committed to being great. You know what's also great, Adam? Built Bar. Built Bar's great.
I knew it.
Built Bar's great. It's nutritious and delicious. It's even deliciouser. That's in the copy. I have to actually say the word deliciouser. No, I don't have to. I choose to because I think it's awesome. Much like Built Bar. 6 amazing flavors that are new, like caramel brownie and apple almond crisp, along with the 12 originals, like mint brownie, double chocolate, and orange, all of which I would hate, except for double chocolate, but I'm sure that most people like them. And they do because Built Bar is incredibly popular. Built Bars are covered in 100% chocolate. They're soft and easy to chew. They're also awesome if you're trying to be health conscious. I'm trying to just have one as like my afternoon snack, and like that's it, and it tides me over well until dinner. Great for keto diet. The peanut butter bar has got 19 grams of protein, just absolutely packed with protein, only 5 grams of sugar and only 5 gram net carbs. If you go to builtbar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON, you'll get 20% off your next order. Use promo code LOCKEDON for 20% off at builtbar.com. We'll be right back. Talk more about what Michael Malone had to say at his press conference today and the first day of full training camp back on Locked On Nuggets. Nuggets, thanks for joining us. Matt Moore, joined by Adam Mares. Make sure to check out all the great shows on the Locked On Network for all the other shows, including, I don't know if you want to check out Locked On Chiefs for just some reason, I don't know why, but that'd probably be a good time to check out that show. So
dear to the worst.
So Malone said today a number of things that I thought were interesting. The first thing ties into what you talked about originally, which is he said, I'm all offense now, Katie, when he's talking to Katie Wingy. We're going to put up 130 per game. Now, look, that's funny, right?
Yeah,
it is funny. at some point, I think he has to look at the roster and be like, look, we lost, like, the front office has to be like, look, I tried to, you wanted Facundo Campazzo because Malone spoke glowingly about him. We'll talk later. Yeah. I got you Facundo Campazzo. I tried to keep Jeremy Grant. I offered the money to keep Jeremy Grant.
He didn't want it.
He didn't want it. There's nobody else on the market that would have been a good fit for us. I got you Jamichael Green. That's the best replacement that we can get. This is what we have. Like, this is what we have. This is the team we have. I think at some point Malone has to be like, we're going to have to put up 130. Like, this is an offensive team. I think he was able to convince himself when he had Torrey Craig and Paul Millsap and you know, 2 years younger, and Gary Harris, we can play defense. But now I just don't know if he can make that argument. I'm not saying that they're just going to go in and become the Don Nelson Mavericks or Warriors. I'm just saying, I think it's likely that that's joke was more than anything an understanding of, at its worst, it's probably an understanding of, I'm going to have to teach a great offensive team how to play defense at a level to which we can be fine, because, you know, I know that we're going to score. So you agree with that sentiment?
No, well, the second part of that, I actually don't agree. The last little bit of it, the Nuggets have to be better defensively than I think you or I think they are going to be this year. Not necessarily that they're capable of, but that they have to get the best of themselves in order to be a true title contender this year. But I wonder if they look at that Lakers series and think, as good as they were, and you know, the Nuggets did a good job of sort of making things difficult for them and keeping these ugly games, but they couldn't score on the Lakers. And I do wonder if there's a part of this that shifts a little bit in the other way, just in large part, again, because they have this offensive-minded roster. But I also just wonder if they look at it and say, we have to be better on offense too.
They need to. So my question to you was whether Malone thinks that. And I think that Malone likes
that. That's what I'm saying.
That. Yeah. And I think that I'm with you in that this is dangerous, because he's done this before where he's been like, I'm not worried about the offense.
Right, right.
Yep. And then it's like, you're only like 10th in offensive rating. And like eventually they wind up in the top five because Nikola is a genius and Jamal is really good and they have a lot of talent. But like, it would be better. I will just say this. There is zero reason why the Dallas Mavericks were able to put up a all-time best offensive rating with Tim Hardaway Jr., the lesser Steph, with Dorian Finney-Smith, Maxi Kleber, Dwight Powell, the limited games Kristaps Porzingis played. That team, one, I think it was an outlier performance, but two, there's no reason that team can put up 115 and the Nuggets can't be 112, 113, 114.
Just, well, there is a reason. And I thought and I thought Michael Malone hinted on, this is part of what I want to say encourages me, but it's funny. You scroll through everybody's media availability these first few days, and what's every coach saying? We want to score more. We want to get more threes. We want to play faster. All the same stuff. So I want to get excited and I want to buy it. But here's what makes me think there's at least a little bit more. I think what Malone said was a little bit more revelatory about what he's thinking and his perspective. And that is that he was talking specifically about getting more corner three-point attempts. The Nuggets didn't generate those. And then broke it down. Why aren't we getting those? Well, it's also tied to us not getting to the rim. It's also tied to us not getting fouls and getting to the free throw line. So to me, it hints at Malone looking at the team and trying to dissect them and do an autopsy and say, where are we not being successful here on the offensive end? Which is just not how he talks and hasn't talked over the last few years. He hasn't done that type of autopsy. He's just done the, you know, broad strokes, this or that. He got into the details, and it makes me think that part of his reflection in this offseason has been looking at how can this Nuggets offense truly be better. So whether or not they can pull it off, whether, you know, all the different parts, we'll see. But that's why that was interesting to me.
Now let us turn to Facundo.
Your boy.
Campazzo.
Campazzo. We got a correct pronunciation. People have been telling me all this, these different pronunciations. It's the S, Campazzo.
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 Campazzo. That's interesting that translates that way. That's interesting. What's the abbreviation for his first name that Malone
used? Facu.
Facu. Okay. That's
dangerous. Malone loves that one, he says.
Dangerous. No, he loves it. As get out. Facu. Malone loves the guy. Just loves the guy. Said that he's told Conley for years. It's the kind of guy that, like, just raved about him today. So at this point, I, member of the PJ Dozier fan club, am very concerned about PJ's long-term future in Denver. Let's say that Campazzo comes out and plays exceptionally well to start the season.
Yeah.
Does that make it easier to trade Gary?
Oh, absolutely. Well, so here's the thing about Gary is he's the defensive guard, right? Maybe Dozier can be that same level defender. He hasn't proven that, but maybe he can. Maybe that's part of what happens here. But to me, absolutely, you could move on from him if you feel that you have him replaced, and maybe even replace Gary somewhere else along the court. Maybe it's not just a perimeter defender. Maybe it's a wing defender, which I think would be more useful for the Nuggets. So absolutely, I think it does. Denver, not only do I think it does, but Denver has Jamal, Monte, Campazzo, and Dozier, all guys that can play the one, can play the two, probably going to play together. And that's before you get to Barton and into Gary Harris. So to me, I look at it and don't just say, could you trade if those other guys play well? It's more about one of these guys is not going to play and they're not going to be happy. So one of these guys is probably not with the Nuggets at the end of this season. Gary is as good a candidate as anybody. I think Monte may be the number one candidate just given his contract and where he's at. But Gary right behind him.
So then is Gary first sub to get Campazzo on the court with Jokic?
Man, you know, that's too far away for me. I don't know.
You want to know what's crazy?
Yeah. It's not that far.
Their first preseason game is in 6 days, buddy. Yeah. 6 days they play regular preseason game.
Regular season is not. We're starting our player previews on Tuesday because that's like 2 weeks before the season. So it's right here. But listen. All these guys are going to play with each other. I mean, there's no player last year that didn't share the court with, like, Jokic, right? So they're all going to get minutes. But I would guess that Campazzo represents, to me, assuming he does enter the rotation, which I am assuming, but it's not a given. But assuming he breaks the rotation, I think he becomes more of the engine of the second unit with a little overlap with the first, but more of an engine of the second unit.
I will mention that our good friend and colleague, TJ McBride, believes that Faku will start.
Wow.
Two guard.
There's no way. Let's
just go ahead and run Jamal, Faku,
yeah,
Will Barton, MPJ, and Jokic. And the most beautiful passing team ever that gave up 168 points per game.
Hey, you know, here's the thing about Campazzo, though. I will say he has defensive limitations. But everybody, yeah. In fact, you saw Luka Doncic at his media availability. What did he mention about Faku? His defense. He's known as this great defender. Now he's not a Kawhi. He's not a lock you down. Sure. But he is like a Fred Van Fleet, a Patty Mills, somebody that's going to just make it difficult for other teams. So whether or not that translates, I don't know. But we shouldn't talk about him as if he's known as a bad defender. We just know him as being tiny.
Malone's talked about him. Like Malone talked about his defense today. Malone talked about his heart. Talked about his heart that he plays with so much heart.
You have to play with heart. If you're 5'11", first of all, that means you're 5'9". And if you're if that small and you're playing in the second best league in the world and having success, and now you come over to the NBA, you have to be the toughest dude on the court. That's just how it works. You can't not be tough if you're that tiny and you've played at this level.
Yeah, let's just move on before I... He's going to – I will learn to love him. I know I will.
I hope.
I will learn to love him. It's not that I don't love him now. It's more a matter of when I hear things like TJ being like, he should start. I'm like, okay, fellas. Let's see if he translates. Because, like, a lot of it for me is, like, the NBA is not the step up to me. It's honestly not. Because I think that – like, I was talking about this the other day with a friend about – a friend didn't know anything about the WNBA. It's, like, a friend outside the basketball world. And he was like, so you like the WNBA? And I was like, I love it. And he was like, why? And I explained to him, I was like, well, for starters, the NBA no longer values passing. Like, it just doesn't. It's one of the reasons Jokic isn't appreciated as much as he should be, is like, brilliant passer. And everyone's always like, that was such a cool pass. But like, everyone just wants to see, like, that dude's a bucket.
Right.
Hoopers,
right.
No. So I think, like, a lot of it for me is just that in the international game is built entirely differently. And the problem is just like there are players that are really great over there that just they don't translate. And some of it's also just like being away, right? But like he's also like he's traveled. So that makes me more hopeful. He's older, so that makes me more hopeful.
A little older, yeah.
Like, not going to have that kind of adjustment period. It's like, he's cool. I will say this. He is the most interesting player coming into training camp. Like, he is absolutely.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Well, I mean, there's a lot. Denver has three. I mean, Bol Bol, who we're probably not going to talk about today, Michael Porter and Campazzo. I think it's an exceptionally interesting training camp for the Nuggets because those three guys are more interesting than usual. Here's one. I want to say this though about Campazzo, and who knows again? Whether he plays, whether or not. But I've long said that this Jokic team can only win a championship, not off of Jamal Murray scoring 50 points and Jokic going for triple doubles. If they somehow can find a 2014 Spurs level of chemistry, and they have an engine that can do it, Jokic is the guy that can make that style of play beat anybody. If you get guys that can finish and play along with it. And I look at Campazzo and I think, okay, he's another guy that just knows how to move the ball and find guys. And I was watching, believe it or not, 2014 Spurs highlights, and you got Ginobili, you got Patty Mills, you got Tony Parker. You just had guys that knew how to make simple passes and medium passes with two or three guys that can make hard passes. And Campazzo gives them, I think, the second best passer that they have had, pure passer, probably since Jameer Nelson, maybe even over Jameer Nelson. So that gives me a little hope. Now, they also are working in a guy in Michael Porter that's sort of the antithesis of this, and that frames the season for the Nuggets. Can they get him on board? But that's why I'm a little more optimistic with Campazzo. It's either going to work or it's not. We'll probably find out pretty quickly.
I thought MPJ was a willing passer last season, so I'm not as concerned about that yet. I think it will eventually become a problem with him, but not yet.
Central question, in my opinion, about Michael Porter. The injuries and stuff linger over it, but central question is, can he be a part of a system without being the core of that system? We'll find it. To me, that's important.
Before we go to break, I just want to note that Malone talked about scoring 130 points a game and being all offense, and then talked about Campazzo for basically half of it. So he is definitely he's fed you, okay? Like, you have to be happy. Like, he has given you the presser. That was the Adam presser is what he gave.
Malone's a point guard, so I was very interested. He raved about him so much that it did make me wonder about Monte and PJ Dozier. It did make me wonder because I don't think he's ever raved about those guys the way he did about Campazzo. How heavy it was.
Yep. All right, let's take a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about some NBA issues. And the first part of the Nuggets schedule was released, which we haven't talked about. So we're going to talk about that when we come back after the break. Make sure to be tuned this week. We'll have continuing coverage from training camp. Lots of great stuff coming up. Got some guests for next week as well. Awesome stuff coming up. Make sure to keep it here on Locked On Nuggets. We'll be right back. Final segment here on Locked On Nuggets. Thanks for making this part of your day. Adam Mara is alongside me, Matt Moore. So, Adam, the NBA has put out its guidelines for COVID. And among them are a huge number of restrictions on behavior.
Yeah.
So I will ask this question. Over under 20 days before a Nugget is suspended for violation of COVID protocol.
Well, yeah. So to describe this here, I'm reading off of ESPN. It says the NBA has warned teams that protocol violations that lead to coronavirus spread impacting opposing teams and causing scheduled derailment could result in fines, suspensions, adjustment or loss of draft choices, which doesn't seem quite fair, and game forfeitures. What they're basically saying is players, they don't want them out in clubs. They don't want them doing all these things that players do quite frequently. In fact, James Harden, I believe just last night, was filmed at the club throwing dollar bills around. So how long? It's going to be interesting to see who the league makes an example of, and rightfully so. The NBA isn't like the NFL, where if a guy gets it, and then they're like, okay, on Tuesday they test, and we can isolate, and disaster strikes, and you lose 15 players, but you delay the game a week or whatever. That's a disaster. And the NBA, that's 8 games. That's a lot. The NBA just can't afford it. They're not set up to be able to say like, oh, well, the Nuggets are just going to have to shut down for 2 weeks and we'll just make it up on the back end. They're not set up for that. So I think they're going to make an example of somebody. I also wonder, there was a lot of talk about the virus in that, or about the vaccine in that memo. So I wonder if the NBA is just worried about this first, I don't know, month or two or 6 weeks, whatever it is, before they can start to provide the players with a vaccine to then maybe relax on it. So to me, it's such a draconian plan to punish these people, or to punish these players if they break the rules, that it makes me think that short term, there's no way they can tell athletes don't go out to restaurants, clubs, or anywhere in public for 7 months.
Yeah, I think that definitely is it seems attainable. I think that they've got to be, have their eyes, like, they have to have this thing circled, right? Like, the corporate partners were like, we got to get this done
right
by the Olympics. Like, you have to get this done by the Olympics.
Have to.
So the NBA is now like, we can do this and we'll get you the vaccine, but I need you to get through this like first 6-8 weeks.
Exactly. Yep. That's what I think it is. Some length of time we don't know right now, but not the full season. Just
right.
Be really strict on it early, and then we'll provide them an alternative.
Yeah. Yeah.
Should they accept?
Spoiler alert. They're not going to be super good. Like,
it sucks that this is a storyline, but it is.
It is. And then, like, it's going to be a thing. Like, we're going to have game cancellations. We're going to have game postponements. We're going to have.
Oh, I don't know if that, I'm going to push back on you for this. Ooh. I don't know that that's true.
Okay.
Because again, I do think that there is a chance that the NBA acquires a vaccine by New Year's or something like that. And you're only looking at a couple weeks. So I don't know that that's necessarily true, that they're going to miss. It's just a huge risk. And the longer it goes on, obviously the risk is exponential.
I think this is going to be one of the problems. I think the NBA is in a difficult spot with the, like, so here's the question is, do you just say, this is what's in the best interest of the product, and we're just going to take the PR hit?
Like, meaning
when, I've been saying this, when they have access to a vaccine ahead of nurses, teachers, policemen, firefighters.
So to me, this is a non-story. And here's why. First of all.
Well, you could say that you don't think it should be one. It absolutely is going to be a story.
They'll take the PR hit. I honestly think he'll take the PR hit because, first of all, people just keep it moving. Like, that'll be a story for 5 days, maybe a week, maybe 2 weeks. But eventually, people will move on. And two, somebody posted this the other day. They're making the vaccine at something like 200,000 doses per day or something like that. Maybe it was even more than that. It came out to, if every player and staff member in the NBA, a realistic number of those, got vaccinated, it would take roughly less than a minute to produce enough to produce them. So yeah, when people are saying you're cutting in line, they might be cutting in line 1 minute. Right. And I know that sounds ridiculous because there's probably the football leagues and all these other different things. But to me, I think we're making a big fuss when it's not actually realistic. Also, when we think about just how many people are impacted by the NBA and what it provides, I know that sounds silly. We're talking about hundreds of millions of people around the world being provided with something, which, by the way, when sports were taken away and entertainment was taken away for 4 or 5 months, people were pretty miserable. I think that I don't think that this is going to be a storyline because people are going to make a storyline of it, but I think the NBA is willing to accept it on principle and also knowing that it'll move on quickly.
I would just think that, like, my position on it has been the same as it was in the bubble with all the talk on the test then, which is, I'm just like, if you're upset that the NBA has access to these tests and other people don't, the problem is not that the NBA has access to these tests. The problem is that these other people don't. Like, if you have an issue, your quarrel is with the federal government that failed in its response. Like, the NBA is not responsible for public health. The NBA is responsible for its players' health, for its team's health, for its coaches' health. Like,
and in the bubble, they actually used some of the money they gained to, when they were using up all these tests, they actually funded better tests. So I think the NBA can sort of have their cake and eat it too. And if they're going to take this, I'm sure they'll do something to try to make up for it.
But I will say, though, that even if I just always kind of want to push back on timelines, like, I just want to, I'm always kind of like, I don't, you know, I just want to push everything kind of back. So it's like, well, like, might have it by January 1st. Like, okay, then let's say like January 15th. Well, now you're into like 3 weeks, and like 3 weeks of play is still going to be enough for there to be problems, as we're seeing with James Harden. Do you want to talk?
One last thing I want to say on it, though. I do think that, let's say James Harden in the Houston, I hate to use him, but let's just say somebody from the Houston Rockets gets it, and it is well publicized that they got it because they were out in public being very unsafe. I do think that the NBA would say, no problem. All eight players that got it are out, but we keep it moving. Rockets, you got to call up your G League guys. You're playing with them, and I'm sorry, but your season takes a big hit. I think the NBA is going to be – this is what the threat to me means from the NBA, that, hey, your season can be ruined if you do this.
It's why they honestly – the biggest thing they should have done is they should have just made it to where you can have six two-ways. Like, six dudes on two-ways that you're like, we can call them up whenever we need them. Like, if we need a guy – we can, you know, and like if you've, or at least like an emergency G League call up for a roster spot for COVID, like if they're on the COVID list, you can call somebody up and be like, well, we pulled six dudes off our G League team. Let's go face the Lakers. Good luck.
Right.
Do you want to talk about Houston for a minute, or you want to say that for another show?
We can talk about them. I don't know where we're going with it, but we'll talk about them.
Well, so first it was the Rockets aren't budging. They expect Harden to be in camp full speed ahead. And then it was, Harden hasn't reported to the Rockets yet.
Right.
And then Ben DuBose, who used to run Locked On Rockets, said, no, he was in Houston. He was working out with players. He's been in Houston. And so it was like, okay, he's been in Houston, but he hadn't worked out with the Rockets. And then he didn't show up for anything with the Rockets this week. He went to first Atlanta and then Vegas. And there's video of him in both places partying. And that's fine. I don't care. I don't care that he was partying. He could have gone to Atlanta, gone to church.
You don't have to tiptoe around this, Matt. Look, man, they have a bunch of things going on there that outside of just the COVID and all this other stuff. They have, let's be honest, they lost their coach, they lost their GM.
Yeah.
It looks like they're in turmoil.
Yes.
He has a right, and players have done this before. He has a legitimate beef to say, like, I don't want to be part of this organization anymore. But there is also something to be – James Harden has been questioned about whether or not he is a winner, a leader, a cornerstone, all these things. And – it sure doesn't seem like it. He's just adding more fuel to the fire. By the way, as we're talking, Tim McMahon is reporting James Harden did not return to Houston for his highly anticipated individual workout Sunday evening, but told Rockets management he will report soon.
Like, this is the thing. It's just like
– soon.
You know, I'm writing capsules on the over-under for all 30 teams. My brain's about to explode. And I just did the Rockets one. And, of course, I had to be like, you should stay away from this. But what's funny is – if you told me they were going to take the Brooklyn deal and it was going to be, you know, Christian Wood and Jared Allen alongside John Wall, Caris LeVert, and PJ Tucker, I'd be like, yeah, I think that team can win 42 games. Like on an 82 game schedule, their over under is basically 31.5, which translates to 500 or 36.
Right.
It's basically 500. It's 36. So I would be like, yeah, that's a 500 team. Versus if Harden isn't traded and this is what he's doing, I'm like, I think you got to take the under if that's what you think is going to happen. Because I think Harden's going to tank the season for them. Like, I've seen this. Like, Nuggets fans pay very close attention to this. Because either you need to be grateful in the future that your stars are not built this way, or you need to be prepared down the line for one of the stars to pull this kind of nonsense. Because, like, this has been my thing with why Houston just needs to pull the cord and trade it. There is nothing worse than when, like, you know, like, and the longtime Nuggets fans know this from the Melo. Like, when he said he wanted out that first season, they weren't 10 games under 500. They were still hanging in.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, a pall was cast over the whole thing. You couldn't do anything because you can't go to work with somebody who you know is like, I don't want to be here. Yeah. Like, not in the NBA. Can't do that.
I'm really curious your answer on this. Given all of the things going on with Houston, like, how much do you judge James Harden for this, given that he's in a situation that he deems to be uncompetitive or non-competitive? Or I assume that's what he means, or at least is unhappy.
I don't know. I don't know that judge is the right word. I think what I would say is, like, I don't judge players, but I have to, like, reach assertions on who they are and what can I expect from them. And, like, this is the difference. Is like, I don't care if this is what he wants to do. Like, that's his choice. But it also means, like, I can't treat you as a serious leader. I can't treat you as, like, a serious guy leading a team. I can't, like, at some point, man, the fact that, like, you ran Dwight Howard off, you ran Chris Paul off, you ran Russ off, eventually, and, like, Russ may have been ownership. That's fine. Like, my first blame in all this goes to Fertitta. Like, that's just where I go. It's like, this has been coming for so long, and we've known this was coming for so long. I said last year, like, when the pandemic hit, I was like, Fertitta's going to burn this down because he lost so much money. He has to start cutting stuff in order to he's going to want the money back. But with Harden, like, even if your owner is terrible, like, you still get to decide how you respond.
Right. Yeah,
and we've seen totally. That time and time again in the NBA. Like, we've just seen that time and time again where there's a terrible owner, but a superstar can handle it in whatever way that he chooses. And now on one level, I could see Harden just being like, nope, no loyalty. I'm going to take care of myself. I get it. Yeah. But my biggest thing, and this is how I was with Anthony Davis, there's other guys on that team. Like, PJ Tucker came to play with you. Eric Gordon wanted to play with you.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Like, all these guys wanted to play with you. And their season is being busted. A season of their careers, when they don't have that many, and they don't make that much, and they don't get to compete that much, like, this season is being busted out of your decisions. So that's,
it sucked to be Daniel House right now, just being like, well, I'm in the middle of this whole thing. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. The one thing I will say, though, that makes – because I agree with you that I think we're too soft on athletes these days, where we try to excuse so many of their actions. Like, well, they want – and I just think we've gone too far with it. But the flip side of this is, if James Harden showed up on time to camp and was working hard, and behind the scenes he said, hey, I'd like it if you traded me, Tim Fertitta would not trade him, because he doesn't need to, and he's a star, and he's going to make more money with James Harden. So I do wonder if there's a squeaky wheel gets the grease factor to all of this. And I'm, again, James Harden's history suggests that there's probably layers to all of this, but at least you could argue, like, hey, man, this is what it takes to get traded in the NBA, and he's just playing the hand he's dealt at the moment.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Last thing before we go, we got the first couple of games. The first half of the Nuggets schedule has been released. We'll talk about it more as we get closer to the regular season, but I did want to lay this out in front of you. They open on Wednesday, the 23rd, versus the Kings. They get a full day off before facing the Clippers on Friday. Well, hey, a day off. They get 2 days off before Monday's game, which is going to be rare.
It's awesome.
They face – the first four games are Kings, Clippers, Rockets, and then Kings again. So we get two of Michael Malone's favorite games versus the Kings.
Ooh, that's games. A good point. Oh, my God.
Good stressful stretch for him.
Oh, man, I didn't even think of that. Yeah.
In that stretch. I can guarantee you he cares more about winning those Kings game than beating the Rockets or the Clippers. A tough start, I think, to the schedule. The biggest thing maybe I do want to tell you is I looked it up. They have more road games than home games to start in this first half of the schedule. Just slightly, it's like two more.
Right.
But of the first section of games, they have two more road games. So, you know, going to be, I think, going to be an uphill battle from the start for Denver getting used to being on the road, but that can also work out well, like we've seen, right? Where new teammates on the road, the bonding experiences of road trips, et cetera, even if things are a little bit different with COVID.
Yeah. The schedule, it wasn't that interesting to me, other than there weren't as many long road trips and long homestands as I expected. That's like the biggest thing for me. I thought that would be one of the changes to the schedule to kind of limit exposure to COVID. But as I've reflected on it over the weekend, there is one area, and I think, Matt, complaining about national games and this or that is it's a little annoying.
And yet.
But I do, and yet, here I am. Because I thought that the best playoff series last year was the Utah Jazz versus the Denver Nuggets seven-game series that literally came down to the final buzzer and one inch, that changed the outcome of that series. There were four 50-point performances. There are matchups against the best offensive center, best defensive center, two dynamic guards that score a lot of points. To me, I look at this and I go, if we're just talking about basketball and stars and fun and all this stuff, then it would make sense. To me, it felt more like a referendum on the cities of Salt Lake City and Denver. Maybe I'm taking this too personal. How did Denver and Utah not get national televised games, and how is Denver in the back half of the national television in the back half of who got the games? I don't want to be too upset about it, because like I said, it's lame, but when I really reflected on it, I thought, that doesn't — why did that happen?
So I think two things happened there. One, I mentioned this to Ryan Blackburn from Stiffs. I think that they're probably gonna backload the Nuggets national TV games. I could be wrong on this. We may get into the second half of the schedule and they may have a similar amount.
Yeah.
But that's dependent upon, I think, upon the Nuggets like record, honestly. It's like Denver's a top three team again, and they're exciting, and MPJ is lighting it up, and like they're once again, like they're right there. They haven't slipped. I think they'll probably backload it, because I've done a lot of schedule research over the years. And so one thing I found is that there's teams like the Lakers that are just, they want them on every night, right? some of these teams, though, they don't have them on the beginning of the year, but when they know that they're going to be in playoff teams and they're previewing playoff matchups late in the year, yeah, in what's normally post All-Star March and April, they get a lot more of those appearances. The Spurs honestly used to be like that. Like the Spurs would open the first week with like two national TV appearances and then vanish until after the All-Star break.
Right.
Because if you don't have to put San Antonio on, you don't. I think from there, I think the NBA probably this year took, we got to get as strong of ratings as possible, because like how much was the conversation last year about like the national TV ratings and the local ones, yeah, too. But I think that this year,
yeah, but the money, they were failing at the path they're already on. That's why they're doubling down on the thing that doesn't work. And this is, yep, again, I don't want to complain about it too much. I'm just saying you can't. But no, if you can't sell, to me, this is a failure of how the NBA markets itself. If you can't sell that 7-game series you just had against teams that are whose cities are side by side of each other, like if you can't sell that, what are we doing here?
This is what I'm saying. I've been saying this has been my number one thing for the last 10 years, and I've gotten to the point where I'm tired of talking about it. And right, I've just realized,
too, yeah,
like the league's never gonna listen on this. They're never gonna listen. I don't know why. But like,
but they are going to ask why LeBron's not getting ratings when the Lakers are, you know, yeah, playing for the 12th day in a row.
Kansas City and Denver play tonight, and I'm sure the ratings were gangbusters. Kansas City, Missouri.
Right. Right. Yep.
But it's Kansas City, Missouri. Right. You know, when Denver's on, it's a big ratings deal. Like Green Bay's on, ratings killer. Like they're
just
awesome.
a good game with good matchups. And yes, it's just it makes me concerned. Here, that the NBA looks at that and says, no.
About it, Adam, this is a star driven league. Like
right,
the whole thing is, well, the teams aren't as important as the players. Then where does it matter where they play?
Right,
but it does.
Right,
but it ultimately does. And they just want, what they really want is they want the playoffs to be LA versus LA and Chicago versus New York.
Right.
And that's what they want. And like, I've just come to accept it. That's just what, and like everyone I think is complicit in that. I don't.
This is all the short term. It doesn't matter. We'll see. They're on this path. The NBA probably is going to have to figure out new media partnerships before too long, because the world's changing and their model might be getting outdated. But we'll see. We'll see. It was annoying to when I was going through it and then really starting to analyze, and I'm like, oh wow, I see what they've done here. They've taken what should be a great storyline to build off of. I mean, they're going to be in trouble if Denver's good for the next 4 or 5 years. They're in real trouble. They're saying they can't sell that.
Yeah, it's an issue. It's genuinely an issue. All right, that'll wrap it up for Locked On Nuggets. Thanks for joining us. Appreciate it. Make sure to rate, review, and subscribe. Helps us out so much. Follow the show on Twitter at Locked On Nuggets. I'm at HP Basketball. Adam is Adam_Mares.
Right? Perfect. Nailed it.
Why haven't you gone to Adam Mares DMVR?
I'll lose my verified if I change my handle.
Oh, you want the blue check that bad, huh?
That blue check, man. It's all the credibility I need, baby.
I don't have a blue check on Peroxisome.
You don't?
No.
Oh, wow.
It's considered collective because it's considered to be like not a person.
You lowly.
I'm I'm beneath you as I wear this shirt.
Ah!
Have yourselves a good day. We'll see you guys again back tomorrow. Thanks for joining us on Locked On Nuggets.